I would always tell engineers, architects early in their career, make sure you get some field experience. You need to see how things get built. It isn't just about if you're a design engineer sitting at your computer and designing something, you've got to have a sense of how things get put together in the field.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
I'm excited to be here today with Michael Sweeney, Eastern U.S. President of HNTB Corporation, to join us here for our Building Better Futures podcast. Michael, thank you for doing this. I hope you're having a good day. And as we jump into it, let's start with, we always like to start with some good news and gratitudes. Do you have any good news you'd like to share, or gratitude that you're grateful for?
Absolutely. I get to sit here on the 62nd floor of the Empire State Building in the greatest city in the world and deliver big transportation projects. And so there's an awful lot to be grateful for. And that's just one of my things I am grateful.
I think it's amazing. And the Empire State Building is such an iconic structure, right? So that's got to really mean something to you, being in the office building. That is just so wonderful. My gratitudes on show day specifically are always to the guests. So I'm grateful to you. So thank you for being here and taking time out of your busy schedule. And I feel like I say this to every guest, but I know how busy you are. So I know this isn't easy. So I appreciate it. And sometimes I'm just like, I'm amazed by the people that do say yes. Like you being one of them is just so amazing to have this opportunity. But what it really tells me is just so much about the industry and kind of the heart of the podcast, which is that people in our industry want to give back and we want to share what we're building and what we're doing with the community and with others. And so it just exemplifies that so perfectly. So I appreciate it. So just to start, tell us a bit about yourself, your background, maybe even prior to HNTB, if you want to take us back to like where you went to school and a little bit of what you studied, and then bring us to the present, your role currently about HNTB, just generally as a company. So sure.
All right. I'll try to give you my quick elevator speech on that. So I've been doing this for 37 years. I've had the pleasure to work in Midtown Manhattan my entire career, even though I've traveled extensively across the country. I went to school in Brooklyn, got a civil engineering degree at Pratt Institute and a master's degree at Polytech University in Brooklyn. Started working at what was Envirodyne Engineers, and it became the fifth company that AECOM bought. It was merged into Konzert Townsend, made it CTE Engineers. Was there from 93 until 2004, and then it was merged into Dimjim Harris, which was a much larger company. And I had a great total of 22 years with what was AECOM. Spent 3 years at Transsystems as their transit rail market sector leader, and then joined HNTB in 2012 as their New York office leader. Was very fortunate. That was a great time. I think all of this 37 years has been amazing from a standpoint of building big projects, but in 2012, if you recall, Superstar Sandy had hit the New York area, and there was a lot of work that unfolded from that. And then the end of my first week at HNTB, we were notified that we won the owner's engineer for the new Tappan Zee Bridge, now the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge. So that combination of events fueled some growth in New York for HNTB. And in my tenure as New York office leader, we grew from 100 to 270 people over about a 3.5-4 year span. So that was wonderful. And we really grew into a much larger presence here in New York, and we're delivering some very significant programs. So from that, I became the Northeast Division president. I held that role for the shortest amount of time, only about a year and a half, because we modified our corporate structure and we created a regional level. At first, it was just an East and a West regional president level. So I began that role a little over 7 years ago. Today, we have an East, Central, and West regional president. And so I have three division presidents that work for me. I have a Northeast, a Mid-Atlantic, and a Southeast. And HNTB has grown significantly. We're almost 7,000 people now. We'll probably have around $3.6 billion in sales this year, about $2 billion in revenue. So it's really exciting. And I think one of the most exciting things for me is that we are an employee-owned company. And there aren't many of us. So we're an ESOP. So every one of our employees is a shareholder in HNTB. And it makes a difference. So I feel really great about coming to work each day and helping to build the value of people's wealth within HNTB.
I find the ESOP model very interesting. And I've talked to several people. I know HNTB is one of them. There's a few ESOPs in the industry. And I just love that idea, right? That the people are what make the company. Without a doubt, it's not me. It's probably not you. I don't want to say for sure. In a lot of ways, we drive and we give direction. But unless we have people to execute, there's really not much we can do individually. So the team makes a big difference. This one is a question that I love to ask, but just about culture. So the ESOP is obviously probably a big part of it. But what do you think HNTB does uniquely well in terms of culture and growth plans for your people and your team?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I think it's something that is very important to HNTB. When you come into any of our offices, whether it's someone's individual office or a conference room, you will see things on the wall, right? You will see our vision, which talks about what the company is about and what our culture is about and what our responsibilities are to each other. You will see our leadership characteristics, there's 17 of those. And these are things that are talked about all the time. These are not things that just hang on a wall and no one ever bothers. These are words that we live by when we do people's performance appraisals. These things are very much part of how we do that. The culture here is a very strong culture, and it's something that is referenced in pretty much everything that we do. I think it fuels people's desire to be here. There's an awful lot of people at HNTB that have been here a long time. And I think it also fuels bringing people into the company, making sure they are a good cultural fit, and then helping them get up to speed quickly so they understand what those words mean and why we talk about it all the time.
That's amazing that you guys have done that. It's actually one of the challenges we're currently facing. We have our missions, our vision, and our fundamentals, which is like our value statements, and we're really pushing them out to the team. And it's been interesting as a journey to try to get everyone to buy in and understand why they're important. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. Now, tell us a little bit about your path to success. I heard about your background, and I think CTE, for what I understand, I think I went to their golf outing last year, and they haven't been a company in 20 years or something, right? So they were with the alumni, I think, don't you guys get together and still stay? So to me, that's like the epitome of culture. When a company doesn't even exist any longer, but the people that really made it still get together and value one another. Tell me a little bit about, you've been obviously at some great companies. What was your path to success? How did you contribute? How did the teams contribute to your ability to be successful?
Yeah, I think that it is all about people, right? And even though this is such a large city and has so many things going on, the engineering community tends to be a little bit small. I feel like I know people that are at other companies. I know the projects that they're doing. And whether someone stays with your company or moves on to do something else, many of us are still connected with each other, which is why that old CTE golf outing still exists. And people just enjoy being with each other and spending time with each other and seeing how everyone is doing. I've had the great pleasure of working with certain individuals at all three companies I've been at, right? And I guess I'm a reason of that because I've hired some of those people once and then hired them a second time and then hired them a third time. But yeah, this is a great industry. There's great people and people want to get to know each other. And so I think that to me, when you talk about someone's path to success, one, you should always be willing to take on new challenges, right? You've got to diversify the experience that you have. You got to get involved in different types of projects. You got to get to know different types of clients. And you always have to be willing to take a risk and put yourself out there. I would always tell engineers, architects early in their career, make sure you get some field experience. You need to see how things get built. It isn't just about if you're a design engineer sitting at your computer and designing something, you've got to have a sense of how things get put together in the field. And so I feel like that combination, whatever you ultimately end up wanting to be, you need to make sure you get some of that field experience early in your career.
It's funny you mentioned that. That's some of the advice my dad gave. I know you know my dad gave us growing up. So my first few projects out of college, I ran a comfort station, which is a nice way to say bathroom. I did some HVAC upgrades at an Air National Guard facility. I did 2 stream bank protection and flood protection wall type projects. And it really did change the way I saw things. Coming out of school and actually watching people execute work was a totally different animal. So I think that's great advice. And it'll lead me into a question. We talk about 2 things on the show. One is how we're building better futures for the communities we work in. And I'll get to some questions related to that. The other part is how are we building better futures for the industry, right? For the participants, for our employees or team members and things like that. So do you have any advice for like young and aspiring people that one day want to be the president of the Eastern Seaboard for HNTB or something along those lines? What's some good advice you've gotten and what's some good advice you'd like to give?
I think there's we could talk for hours about this, Eric. I think there's a lot there. I'd like people to want to say yes to things, right? You've got to put yourself out there. If someone asks, hey, who's interested in this? Say yes. You've got to be willing to commit some time. And that includes not just your time at work, but perhaps there's some evenings and maybe there's some weekends because you've got to go to events. You've got to get people to know who you are, right? And within your company, you've got to make sure that you're getting to know how that company works, not just the few people that you might work with on a day-to-day basis, but understanding the broader organization and understanding who is there that you look up to and why do you look up to that person? What is it about their behaviors that you're hoping to model? And you can ask questions too, right? You can go up to one of those people and say, hey, would you mind if we were able to get together and have a cup of coffee or perhaps grab lunch one day? I'd love to pick your brain about some of these things that I see, admire. That's how mentors develop. And everyone should be willing to ask someone to be their mentor. Could be in an unofficial capacity where it's something that you take the initiative to do, or perhaps your company has a more formal mentoring program. All of those things are facets to you figuring out what you want to do with your career and how you can advance your career in the direction you want to take it.
You know, we had another guest on the show and they had mentioned something to along the lines of, if you don't ask, the answer is no. And I love that philosophy. And I remember earlier in my career, I've gotten that advice and it's intimidating to call someone that may assume you should already know the answer or will think you're dumb because you didn't know the answer. And I guess as I've gotten older, what I've learned is that really doesn't matter. No one thinks that. People love people that ask questions. It's one of my favorite qualities in a team member is, if they're going to ask me questions, because I know 2 things for sure. One is that means they care, right? It's the only reason they're asking a question is because they actually care about what they're about to do. And the other thing is they're going to try hard, right? They may not be perfect. They may not always be right, but they're going to try and put their best foot forward. And I love pick up the phone, ask questions of people you respect, because 99.99% of the time, they're going to want to help and they're going to be excited to answer your questions. Awesome advice. I love it. I'm going to jump a little bit outside because this was something that came up. I do know you, obviously, outside of the show, but this was something I did not know. So it came up in our research, and it was that in 2024, you were the Honorable Ray LaHood Award, Man of the Year for WTS, for all you've done to help women in transportation. And I wanted to give you a minute to talk about that. What did it mean to you? What advice do you have for women that are trying to get into the industry and into transportation specifically?
Sure. Yeah. Well, the first thing I would say is WTS is a great organization. And particularly for women, if you are in our transportation business and you're not part of WTS, I'd strongly encourage you to do that. I've been engaged in WTS for at least 20 years now. I was fortunate enough to be a 2-term board member. So I served 4 years on the board. was really a wonderful experience in helping to make that organization stronger and advance some of their initiatives. We today, HLTB, has one person on the international board and another who is the chair of the foundation board. So WTS is something that's very important to HLTB as well as myself. I think its primary focus of advancing women in transportation is just a great cause, right? And inherently, and this is just a male-female thing, men often think that they can have half the qualifications needed to do something, and yet they're like, oh, I'm male, it's fine. Whereas women could have 8 or 9 out of the 10 qualifications, and they'll say, I should wait until I get those other two things. My advice is don't wait. Be confident. Go for things. You can do it, right? And so you shouldn't be feeling like you need to wait. WTS is an organization that can help you do that, right? There's lots of great women role models and advocates and people that will help you. And so it's a really good organization for people to be involved in.
Very cool. And I think it goes back to your advice earlier, which was like, say yes, right? If someone asks, who can do this? I'll give it a shot. Similar advice there. And it is a challenge. I know my sister, she's obviously in the industry and she's a woman. And I don't know if she's a member of WTS, but by the end of the day, I will make sure she is. I will call her when we get off of this podcast. But I think it's great what you're doing. I'm starting an initiative with the CMA nationally to have a scholarship for women, which I'm really excited about. And the more we can do to diversify the industry, the better off we're all going to be in the long run. So I think I applaud your efforts. And congratulations on that award. I know it's very important. It's an honor. So congratulations. So we're speaking a lot about transportation. I know that's something HNTB is heavily involved in. I know, but obviously infrastructure in general. And so I wanted to ask you, in the vast portfolio of projects that you've worked on, is there any one or two that particularly you feel like impacted the community in such a strong way and you're just so proud of that you'd want to talk about and share?
Absolutely. And the good thing is for me, there's a long list there, but projects that really mean a lot to me. I spent a lot of time working with the East Side Access team, the project that's now known as Grand Central Madison. I was the chief engineer for that station for the better part of 5 years. And so what got built and opened in 2023 was really what we designed quite a long time ago. And that's a really amazing project. That one's definitely near and dear to my heart. We did rehabilitation of Times Square Station, two phases there, and that station looks good, even though that work is pushing 2 decades now. So the amount of use that those stations get, you have to really stay at it to keep them looking the way you want them to look. More recently, some projects that are really impactful for me, we were fortunate enough to help build the Mario and Cuomo Bridge, which is a really iconic structure, beautiful structure, particularly at night. We also did the Goethals Bridge. We designed the Kosciuszko Bridge. So it's great that New York now has a number of new cable stay bridges, really beautiful bridges, and more to come. And then things that we're working on right now, which I think will change the city even further. We designed Penn Station Access, and that's being constructed. And it'll bring 4 new stations to the somewhat of a transit desert in the East Bronx. So that'll be really good for the community there. Doing the program management for JFK. And I remember so distinctly when now President Biden said that LaGuardia looked like a third world airport many years ago. It spurred the renovation of all the airports in this area. And now we have a brand new LaGuardia. We have a new Terminal A at Newark, and Terminal C is pretty good. We're going to get a new Terminal B, and the work that we're doing at JFK will result in a completely new era, right? New Terminal 1, new JetBlue Terminal, Delta's Terminal is beautiful, American has done renovation, brand new roadway network and back-of-house facilities and parking. And so it'll be amazing to get through all of that and for people to see a first-class airport in all aspects of New York.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp., your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
You spoke about going to school in New York, New York being the greatest city in the world, and that I similarly went to school in New York and think New York is the greatest city in the world. But I am a Long Islander, And so you mentioned East Side Access during the and so many amazing projects that you just mentioned. I'm going to touch on a few of them, but East Side Access has changed the way I live and work. So I applaud and appreciate everyone that worked on that. I know it was many years in the making. And I know I'm not alone. Long Islanders in general, and even those from the city that are trying to get to Long, it's just changed the way we can maneuver around the city. It's amazing. So we all thank you and the team and everybody that was involved in that project. I think the airport changes have been amazing. As someone who flies not frequently, but often, it's a stark difference from what we experienced years ago. And they look beautiful. And what I love about both the airports, and this is what I wanted to say about the Tappan Zee and the Mario and Cuomo Bridge, is I love what they've done for the community. Like, the airports have done a great job bringing in local vendors and hiring local and really figuring out a way to say, that's what infrastructure is about, right? We're here to improve the communities we work in. That's really your only goal at the end of the day. And the bridge is beautiful, and you can ride your bike across it. And it's like such a nice, I haven't done it many times, but it's just beautiful up there. And the bridge really adds that the value and the community they have up there. All magnificent projects. And I love that we get to do that as an industry, that we really get to impact people's daily lives. Changed my work life completely, but also the recreation and the joy of a community, right? By building these beautiful structures that actually add to everyone's daily life. So I really appreciate those projects. I wanted to talk a little bit about, I know you're actively involved in a lot of boards. So we're talking about some great projects that are either underway or have been completed. But what do you see as the future trends? What are the next things we have to do to keep this city moving forward?
Yeah, you're right. There are many things for all the projects that we've spoken about and all the great things that are going on for the wonderful AIJA bill that we've had, and we'll have reauthorization coming up in a couple of years. There's still so much more to do. We've got very old infrastructure throughout the country, but particularly in the Northeast. And we've got to do a better job of getting this infrastructure renewed. And then as we're doing that, we have to be very mindful of climate resiliency. We've got to prepare this infrastructure for what it needs to deal with today and for the next 50 or 100 years. And storms are not like they used to be, right? They're bigger, they're more severe, they're more frequent. And so figuring out exactly what that means and customizing those solutions is something that has got to be on the forefront of everyone's mind. We're working on a wonderful project now, the East Side Coastal Resiliency here. I can pretty much look at it outside my window. And it is creating a more resilient infrastructure on the east side of Manhattan. And a lot of that work is happening throughout the city, but just a vital amount of infrastructure improvements that are needed to make the city safer and to protect those assets. And so I think that's a big part of what we need to look at. And then the other thing I guess I would add is that we have an initiative that's called Digital Infrastructure Solutions, and it's a very broad topic, right? But you think about how technology has advanced itself, and that is clearly a topic that you could dive into in so many different ways. But whether you talk about CBTC to improve the safety and the speed of transit systems, or you talk about drones and how they're used in inspections of bridges and hard to access structures, or any number of other things that technology has advanced, those are the things that we have to be bringing to our clients on the design side, on the CM, on the program management side, on the construction side, to make sure these things are being done better, faster, and cheaper.
I met with one of your team members that I think is part of that digital innovation team you're talking about, and just some really exciting conversations. We spoke at CMA last year, and they've done a good job of having a technology track. So I've been excited to see some of those speakers. But I do want to ask you, so on the physical infrastructure side, tell me a little bit about high-speed rail. Is that going to come to New York or the Northeast Corridor? And if so, how do we get it there? Because I think we need it. There's a lot of major cities in a short run here where a train would be efficient compared to flying or driving. It would be a huge improvement, I think.
I think the short answer is yes, it's just going to take time. If we look at the Northeast Corridor, which is clearly the most heavily used corridor, and it's the only component of rail in this country that actually turns a profit. We have very old infrastructure there. A lot of that's happening right now, right? Amtrak has built up their organization, is receiving much more capital funding than they ever had in the past. And they're taking on big projects like a new Hudson River Tunnel, new Frederick Douglass Tunnel, new Susquehanna River Bridge, a new Bush and Gunpowder River Bridges, a portal bridge. There's so many projects that need to get done. Now that gives us, in the case of Susquehanna, right? Those trains will be able to go over that new bridge at a much higher speed than they do today. I believe it's 90 to 160. So it gives you what I would say is incremental but meaningful speed improvements and time improvements. It also gives you a much more reliable infrastructure. And so that's how I think Amtrak and the Northeast Corridor will tackle we call it higher speed, right? It'd be great if up and down the corridor, you did 160 the whole way. That's not practical, I think, because of lots of curves and other things that are built into the infrastructure. Do I think we're going to see a separate, dedicated, perhaps more direct high-speed rail? Probably not. I know that was looked at about a decade ago, and the cost is quite significant. And so I think right now the focus is really on making sure that we have new infrastructure and that it makes those improvements. And like I said, there's a lot going on, right? The TIME program in Connecticut is fixing a whole lot of this. Amtrak has a massive effort underway to address old infrastructure along the corridor. And when it's all said and done and some of those new train sets are put online, I think it's going to be really good for people, and a lot of people will be using the train because it's a reliable and enjoyable way to do that, and the speeds will be better.
I'm excited for that. That will be another thing that changes my life. If I don't have to fly to DC or Boston, change my life.
Yeah. Went to DC yesterday, so I do it a lot.
Yeah, it's not bad, but if it was faster, it'd be great.
Right. Yes.
So we're coming close on time here. So I'm going to ask you one last question. And I think most people would say that you've had an incredibly successful career. And part of that has probably been making some tough decisions, right? And from time to time, we all have to make tough decisions. And so I just wanted to ask you, is there a particularly challenging decision you've had to make in your career that you think back on and maybe changed your trajectory, or maybe that you regret and you say, hey, I wish I'd handled that differently?
I don't know that I could pick one. In 37 years, I've only worked at three places. So I changed jobs twice, right? Those are big decisions in someone's life. But there's lots of other big decisions when you're pursuing big projects, when you are perhaps having to deal with a client on addressing an issue where something didn't go exactly the way you wanted it to, or when you're looking to hire key personnel and convince those people that career move is best for them. So to me, there's lots of very pivotal things that happens in people's career. For me, what you want to do most of all is you want to be someone who's seen as fair, right? No matter how you deal with someone, you always want to be as seen as being fair and being trustworthy. And if you have those things, particularly if someone knows you already, then that helps tremendously in those conversations, because then they know who they're talking to, and there's sort of a built-in level of confidence that you don't have to overcome those issues.
I love that philosophy. We talk about that internally a lot. We are people of our word. So if we say something, we're going to deliver on it. And if we can't, we're going to communicate exactly why and be very open about what's happening. So I applaud that. So before we let you go here, I'm going to do a quick lightning round and 1-2-word answers. These are mostly for fun and just to get to know you better. And from what I understand, I believe you like to play the occasional round of golf. So I will ask you, what is your favorite golf course in the world?
I got a lot of them, but I'll give you Pebble Beach.
Oh, wow. Is 17 as beautiful as it looks on TV?
It is. 7 is more iconic, but yes.
Oh, is 7 the one? Oh, sorry. I thought it was 17. So
7's the little island.
The island. Okay. All right. That's my mistake, but it's beautiful in person. I think it's probably pretty magnificent. What's your favorite travel destination in the world?
Again, lots of good places I've been. Really love Ireland. Going to go back there again next summer. There's some beautiful places in this country too.
Ireland's beautiful. My best friend got married there and we had a great time. And just, we went all up from east to the west and then down south and came back to Dublin. It was just amazing. Do you have a favorite movie?
Let's see, boy. There's so many good ones. Let's go with Rocky.
Okay, cool. And last one is, I don't know if you're a music person or not, but what's the favorite concert you've ever been to?
Definitely a music person. Saw a number of concerts this summer. What's the favorite? I'm going to go with Rush at Radio City Music Hall.
Cool. Very cool. That's all the time we have for today. So we'll include the resources mentioned in today's shows in the notes. And thanks again for listening, everybody. Keep an eye out for our next episode.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Building Better Futures. The show notes include links to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.